Baruch Hashem, where is it the first? I think so.
What? It was been before, but
yeah.
Baruch Hashem is been after.
Of many of
us, Hashem. Hashem. No. Yeah, we're happy. We're thrilled. So first of all, again, Yasher Koyach for hosting it. It's a schus because I'll tell of a story. Somebody who was nifted this year was Rabbi Arya Finkel, Zechayna Vracha. He was one of the Mir Rosh Hashivas, my first cousin. He was a giant of a person. And his personality, everything about him was extraordinary. And he was the Chaziyom Neroyim. And one of the sore points in the Mir was that they Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the place was jam-packed. You know, everyone came Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Yeshiva, hundreds. On Simchas Torah, because most people lived a little further away, kids, there's a schlep, and people, you know, whatever. So Simchas Torah was quite empty. Yeah, the Bachim were there, but they were Americans. Simchas Torah was a little bit empty, and they really wanted to have people come in. So Rabbi Arya Finkel saw my brother, and he wanted to give him like different mussar a little bit, that he should come. It was like right before Sukkot. It was between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So he tells my brother, Reb Leibel, you cry with us. Why wouldn't you come laugh with us? Why wouldn't you come rejoice with us? And that was the way he gave Musa. You know, it was a small, gentle reminder, but it was with humor and niceness. You know, we think of a shul and Yiddishkeit as a place of, you know, when you sin, where to go to faveris, where to cry, where to beg, but that people should find happiness there in a shul community setting, we don't know anything about that, and it's very hard. I think it's one of the problems kids have, that they associate Yiddishkeit with hardships and with the difficult parts of life, but the expression of joy and getting together and singing and you know, just and enjoying yontiv and so on is really, really something that is missing, I think. And to keep making it and to be conscientious about it is a lot, so I appreciate that. Even the Goyen, who the outside is tonight, the Goyen all year round was extremely distant from people. People did not get into the Goyen, and he did not waste his time with people. On Sukkot, he was open, and people could come to him. It was the one yontiv that he was extremely welcoming. People came to him, and so on. So it's befitting the Goyen's Yahrzeit to create an environment of Simchas Shel Mitzvah and including community. Be'ez Hashem should keep doing it for many years, and Be'ez Hashem Jonathan.
And why do you know the Maishas by Purim, right? The Talmidim of the, and so they were, they didn't learn by spoiler.
Right.
I would get into those Maishas. But why did the Goyen do it? But that's when Sukkot was open more than any else.
So I would say that the Metzias of Sukkot is inclusiveness. It's something that includes all of Klal Yisrael, the Chola Ezrach Yeshiv Basukkah. So being that the essence of the Yantav is very inclusive, it says we learn, the halacha is, the pasuk says, everybody in Klal Yisrael can sit in one sukkah. That's how you know that you don't need to have a Shavu Pruta. So I would assume that that's probably the reason behind it. Okay, so we'll try to learn something of a Goyen's Torah on Sukkot. It's appropriate to learn it tonight. And we'll try to explain, there's a famous Goyen with a problem, and we'll try to work it through. The Gemara says two understandings as to what the Sukkahs represent. One is the huts that Klal Yisrael had in the Midbar. They needed to live in something, and as such, it represents living in the Midbar. Like the man, like the water, you had huts also. Another Pshat the Gemara is Anani HaKavod, clouds of glory. The pasuk keeps talking about the Anan that accompanied Klal Yisrael and so on, but it's not clear what is unique about that. It said it smoothed out the road, it protected them, so it also sort of fall under that category of helping Klal Yisrael. The Goyen has a very, very different pshat. It's his Pirush Anshei Ashirim, which is his actually, he wrote it, and he says that really Sukkot is not Sukkos is not the Anania Kovet just stam. The Anania Kovet had accompanied Klal Yisrael, and when they sinned, it left them, and there was no Anania Kovet in Klal Yisrael. And then, when they built the Mishkan, they were told they were forgiven. So Sukkos comes right after Yom Kippur. They were told it's forgiven, and the Anania Kovet came back into the Sukkah. That's what the Goyen explains, and that's why it's Sukkos and not Pesach and so on. So the Goyen says, Sukkos is really a yontiv expressing some sort of measure of coming back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu re-accepting us by the fact that he had canceled the Anania Kovet beforehand and reinstituted them, and that's what it's about. That's what the Goyen says. There's a problem. There's a pasuk in Nehemiah. It's part of that same Vayivarech David that we say in the morning, every morning. This is a little more, this is a little lengthier. I mean, it's part of the same parasha. But as the parasha goes on, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them into the desert, and he gave them man, and he gave them water, and so on. And your forefathers sinned. They didn't listen to any mitzvahs. They didn't remember the nisim I did. They wanted to go back to Mitzrayim. Af, he says, ki osalam egel masecha vayom zelahecha shalcha meretz Mitzrayim. They made a golden calf, which is the aveir that Yom Kippur is mechap on. And vayasun otzis gedolos, they sinned terribly. So he continues and he says, ve'at brachmecha rabim lo izaftum b'midbar. You didn't let, even though they were so difficult, they sinned, and they didn't, and they rebelled, and they made an egel, you did not cast them away. Es amud ha'anan lo sar me'aleihem. You didn't take away their amud anan b'yomom l'anchoz b'derech, to lead them the road. Ves amud eish b'alai lo herlem v'sedeh she'echobam. So from first pasuk in Nehemiah, that even after they sinned, it was never taken away. That is a real problem to guard. What? So the Goyen himself, in another place, in Aderes Elyo on Kisisa, he says there were two. He says there was the Anan that was there beforehand was temporary, and it had certain drawbacks. Not only the prophets could see it, not everybody could see it, and was only meant to be temporary, and this was more permanent. He does make some sort of distinctions, but I'd like to be more specific, and I'd like to understand more how making the Mishkan and having the Anan is actually the expression of Kabbalah's Tshuva. So, if you take a look at the Psukim, and I printed out the Psukim. If you take a look at the Anan, this is something Avram Shai started to mention. If you take a look at the Psukim before the Mishkan, it says there was an Amud Anan that would show them the way, and at night they had Amud Eish. It says, the Vayi Anan V'choshech V'yoros HaLayla, and you have Vayi Somer Anan Mipneihem, you have a sort of anon, a cloud that stands and walks ahead of them. From when they finish the Mishkan, at the end of Pekudei, you have Vayechasa Anas Ol Moed, you have the anon covering it, you have the anon Ukvoid Hashem Moleis HaMishkan, Ubalas Anon Me'al HaMishkan, and so on. And it says they actually use that Anan. Vim lo yala Anan v'lo yisad yamaloso. So the Anan was now on the Mishkan. It covered the Mishkan, it was in the Mishkan and so on. So there's a difference between the Anan somehow found itself in expressing itself in two ways. The Anan is mentioned in three contexts. You have the Anan as an Amud Anan. You have the Anan in Matan Torah. And then you have this Anan the Mishkan. So let's discuss a little bit, let's understand what these Anans represent, what they are. So all of the Ananim that we're talking about do represent some sort of Gilui Shechina. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Klal Yisrael ki ba'onan era lakaporas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears in a cloud. What does that mean? That means, just like when you have a cloud covering something, you know that there's something inside, but you don't know what it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never appears to us in a way that we actually can, quote unquote, put our hands on it. That's by definition not possible. But we have a very strong sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu there, guiding us, protecting us, teaching us, answering our tefillos. In other words, even on Har Sinai, we didn't see. The Onan took away the ability to see. It obfuscated. It made it unclear. But it was very clear that there is. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us what to do. In other words, an Onan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears only with an Onan. The Avodah of Yom Kippur took place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which means it is the most powerful presence of Hashem in the world. But you can't walk in and touch base with it. You need to cover it with an anan, because that's really the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears enveloped in an anan. That's what the anan is. So the anan always marks the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the anan is a way of telling us there is, but you cannot really have a clear understanding. If I can give an example, I guess we'll sort of make it current in some ways. There are certain imaging techniques where you can actually see what's inside. Basically, they can actually see what's inside. There are other techniques where you know there's something there and you can describe it, but you have to draw your own picture. You're not seeing a picture, you're sort of getting a sense, these waves are being blocked here, these waves are being blocked here, these waves are changing here, and you have to make a, but the picture you see is not, it's not like a picture that you took the direct picture, it's something that you sort of have a sense of it and you have to reinterpret it. That's Hashras HaShchina, and that's Tanan, and so on. There are two radically different arrangements of Hashem to us. One is HaKadosh Baruch Hu leads the way for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a higher God's. The paradigm that Hashem sets for us to emulate is beyond us. It's higher, and I need to follow that lead. And that's at first glance seems to be really a way to go about it. And the advantage that is, we really see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being beyond us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being higher than us, and we follow that lead. The disadvantage of that is that that's a temporary arrangement. I can decide not to follow someone's lead. Someone says, you know, I can take it from where you are and move you forward 10 steps. At the third step, I can say, you know, I'm kind of tired of it. I think I'll stop here. Or vice versa. The teacher can get tired and say, I think we'll call it quits over here. Because it's not really part of me. It's really something outside of me that I am following to better myself. Okay, so, you know, at some point yes, some point not. But when something is within something else, when something is part of me, so if somebody, let's take an example. Everyone has a sense of his own body. So let's say a person, his abilities, his physical abilities to move are X. And a coach comes along and it says, I can make it X plus. So we try it. It's a little tough and it's a little rough. And at some point we decide we're not going to make a parnasa playing basketball. It's not going to happen. This Gilgal at least. And we tell him, I thank you for your effort and I'm really glad what you did. That's it. On the other hand, God forbid, a person has a stroke. And he recovers, but he needs a lot of rehab to get back to where he was or close to where he was. people don't spare an effort. It's grueling, sometimes extraordinarily grueling. And people, so here we have a situation, two people, they're both trying to get to the same point. So the guy who was a former basketball player is now going to do grueling rehab to get to that pretty much place. He doesn't want to stop where the bookkeeper, the accountant stopped. Why? I mean, is it objectively good to jump 3 feet up in the air or not? What's the answer is, if it's something that you perceive as being beyond you, it's nice, but it's not vital. I'm not going to do it with Mesiras Nefesh. If it's me and self, then I will do it at all costs because I don't want to lose part of myself. So for this basketball player, or being able to jump up so high and getting the ball in his who he is, he's going to make every effort humanly possible to get to that point. So we have two ways of following Shechina and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is perception that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the high and the noble and the beyond us, and one is the perception that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is us. That's one half of the story. The flip side is just as true. If I have a Talmud and I try hard and I work with him, and at some point I reach a certain limitation. So I say, you know, we've had a great year together, we've had a great 2 years together. I think we've gotten as far as we can. You know, let's make a Mesivas Prayer, then let's move on. If it's a child, you can blow up, but you'll never say, you know what, I think I was mechanech you for enough years, I think we'll call it quits at this point. Doesn't happen. The reason why you blow up at a child more, because with a Talmud you have the migu, you have the possibility of saying move on, you're sometimes a little more patient. With your kids, since you can't say move on, you're not so patient. A lot of times the two are connected. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being in the Mishkan, so you have an Amud Anan, which is a standing pillar, so to speak, and walking in front of Klal Yisrael. And then you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwelling within Klal Yisrael. When it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is within the Mishkan, it means his Mishkan is his home, so to speak. His home means this is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose really to express himself. To this is the point from which he wants to emanate. It sort of is a situation of being inseparable. Your place is the place that you're enveloped in. So two things changed when HaKadosh Baruch Hu moved from being an Amud HaAnan, walking in front of us, and to a Mishkan where HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells within. It changed Klal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, changed Klal us. I want to add another point along this line, a bit of a deeper point, I think, and it really drives home the point of the Mishkan in this context. Let's take the following scenario. Imagine a person. The Gemara says in Yuma that sometimes when a person is machzeh grushasai, when a person takes back a spouse that he divorced, it's a stronger bond than first time round. And let's take a simple example. A person has to choose a product, an item, a school, whatever you want. A person has a choice. He has a choice which schools to send his child to, and he naturally chooses to go to Washington. That's obvious. I don't know what you do if you don't live in the area, but if you live in the area, for sure. So now, so his choice is based on this seems to be the best, and that's why I'm choosing it. If it were, you know, that's a person is unhappy with whatever it is that he chose, and a person goes somewhere else. Person is then not happy, and he comes back to the original. So something has changed over here. It's not that I have chosen this as the best product of different products, but rather this is become my default. It's just like you know, a child who he leaves home for many, many reasons. He goes on to school, he goes to work, he gets married, but home is always a sort of a place you come back to. There's no difference in that sense. The point of distinction between choosing something and coming back to something is a world of difference. When a person is a tzaddik gomer, and a person chooses right, then what he demonstrates is that, in my opinion, this is best, which is great, and it's good. A person who chose right, went off, and looked around, and came back again, that's a very, very different statement. It's not only a statement that I've now choose this to be the best. Last I thought this is the best, 2 years ago I thought that's the best, now I think this is the best. I've now come back to it and have made it a sort of my default setting. I made it my home. Tshuva is very fascinating. We would think the following. The word tshuva, return, why would we return? Let's say, let's give you an example. A person buys car X 1 year. He runs it in the next 2 years down the road, 3 years, whenever he's changed a car, he decides to go for car Y. If he's not happy with it, the third year he'll choose car X. The word return is really not, I'm choosing car X. Yes, in a sense, it's the same car, but that's irrelevant. I've now just, you know, gone through it. The word return, and just like we gave that Gemara when somebody's Masig Rishasai, when a person returns back, he's making a statement that this is really my root and my default setting. So there is something a person accomplishes with the second time round coming back that he really didn't accomplish first time round. Sukkot is a yontiv of Balei Tshuva. It's the yontiv of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is more than doing right. The first time round that we choose, Shavuos, is the yontiv that we chose what's right. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is the yontiv that we chose to come back. That's so when we come back, there's a very, very different perception. I want to tell you a fascinating story that happened. It wasn't in Sukkah, but it was a house. My Rebbe was Reb Nachum, Zechon Evracha. Reb Nachum was possibly in the Mir, he was the biggest London Maggid Shir that the Mir produced. And he was the one that drew everybody to the Mir Yeshiva. When I came there in the late 60s and through the 70s, and there was Reb Nachum. He was a person who did nothing but sat and learned. His mind was in it, his heart was in it, he breathed it, he couldn't care much about anything else. He lived in a basement, underground. It was so wretched that it was so underground that the army declared it an official shelter. It was certified shelter because that's how much underground it was. It was enough underground inside Iraq. And there was kind of a window that sort of, that's where he lived. He had three rooms there. So I used to learn with him. I learned with him, with his son, was my chavrusa. So we would learn together with the father an hour and a half every day, like in the early afternoon. He had chavrusas, you know, he would learn with Bachram. It wasn't that unusual, but that slot was just myself and his son. There was an old Rav who had learned in the Mir. He had gone to America. He had become like a very successful. He was a rabbi, but he was sort of he did the circuit. He did the benedictions at the Republicans, the Democrats, the fundraisers. He was a man of the world. The yeshiva setting was kind of small on him, as they say in Ivrit, katanalai. And he was a fine person. He was an erelich person, but he was a man who got around and, you know, and so it was all over. But he retired, got older, retired in Yerushalayim, and we sort of ran out of steam in these things. He started wanted to learn again, so he would ask different people to learn with him, and asked Reb Nachum, agreed, and once a week to learn with him at a kvias. And this person was like slotted Tuesdays right after we finished, he would come and learn. He started coming earlier and earlier, sort of cutting an hour of time. So the first one or two times Reb Nachum didn't say anything. The second, the finally, like the third time, he really was like, he moved a half hour early, 20 minutes earlier. The Eiffel sort of looked at his clock, made some sort of comment of it being a bit early. Like, it was very, they wouldn't tell somebody off, but who knows? So this person said, Reb Nachum, let me tell you something. He said there was a balagola in Europe. A balagola, I hope everybody knows what balagola is. Balagola is a guy who drives horse and buggy. And he decided he's going to see the big world. So he went for many, many days. I mean, I don't know how far he could go, but in those days, the big world was Europe Europe. It was whatever gubernia was, the gubernia outside. It wasn't whatever. He traveled for a whole bunch of times. He comes back, and you know, after davening, everybody crowds around to hear. And he said, Rabbi Yisai, he said, I've been all over the world, and there is nothing like the Beis Medrash in the world. So you'll tell me that who's this great connoisseur that's saying it? Yankel the Balagola? He says, the world-renowned figure statesman, Bilam, says, Matoiv Alecha Yaakov. So he said, Reb Nachum, I've been everywhere. All the places that everybody wants to be at. There is nothing like this room over here in the whole world. That's the way he said it. It was touching because it was his lifetime he was experiencing a lifetime. But the point, what I'm trying to bring out the nimshal is the returning. In other words, when we do tshuva, I had a personal experience. You know, sometimes somebody tells you Musa that you really take to heart. I grew up kind of, fairly insulated environment. I mean, I grew up in New York, Manhattan, you can't be that insulated, but still, where I was, everybody was, everybody was kind of traditional from side. I was working Neshat Torah, and at some point I was in charge of making schedule programs for middle division, whatever it was, and a fellow came, he had become about tshuva a few years before. He had sort of yeshivas, he was there for a year or so. His brother did extremely well. He didn't do so well. He went back, basically sort of dropped it all. He was an investment banker, lived in Manhattan, in Chelsea. He owned a condo. He was, he lived a full life. This was a few years later, he'd come back. And he was asking me I was trying to make a schedule for him, and he was kind of negative. He doesn't want this, wants this, wants that. Finally, I wasn't that experienced, so my patience ran out, and I said, if you really don't want any of it, why'd you come back for? And he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, Rabbi, I assure you that if I would have found there one thing to stay for, I wouldn't be back here. And it was a very powerful message for me, because I'd been sort of all my life in a certain cocoon, and I could fantasize about, what's out there. He came back. And when you come back, it's a very different, what you're describing, something very different. When you come back, it's a recognition that this is home. This is where I am. This is who I am. This is where I belong. So it says that the tzaddikim gemurim used to sing a song by Simcha Sheva, and Balei Tshuva did. Each one has a certain song. The tzaddik says, I chose right to start with, and I chose well. And that's a very important song, and that has its own kosher mayim. And Balei Tshuva says, I've come back home. The word tshuva means to come back. It doesn't mean to choose right second time. I've come back to something. And that's the pshat, the Anani HaKavod, the Mishkan means it's a home. In other words, Hashroas HaShchina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael is perceived not as a goal on top of a mountain to reach up, but it's who I am and where I belong. And I may stray from home, and I may not be home, and I may be absent for a while, but I can never disown home. It's a very, very different. So it has two ramifications for us. It opened up the world of tshuva for us. It helped us understand also that we gain something by having strayed and come back. Not that a person should stray, but we have an understanding. And you see it in Klal Yisrael. You see people that have been estranged from Yiddishkeit, maybe generations, and it's a homecoming for them. It's not something new, but it's as if something, it's where they should have been all the time. And there's a sense of that, and that's incredible. That's the gift of Hashros Hashchin in the Mishkan. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu went, when we came out of Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an Amud Anan. He was a cloud that was beyond us and leading us to where we were not. We were following a lead to something we were not, and to grow. And that's certainly the first step in understanding Tov and Ra. We lost that because we disowned the ownership, and we said, you know, we're not. It's not for us. You know, Nitna Roish Neshuva Mitzrayim, Eila Lech Yisrael. When we came back, so we had a different attitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu came back to us in a different format. Now the Onan would fill the Mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had constructed his home in Klal Yisrael. That was his home. That's so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if he would leave us, he would always, so to speak, pine to come back. And even if we would leave, we would always have like a sort of something pulling us back and bring us back again. That's the Ananya Kavah Vazocha to the Mishkan. We should be Zoicha. It is the Antiv of Tshuva, and everybody, whether you're born from or not, everybody is in the process of returning. Everybody has where to come back to. And we should be Zoicha, Mirz Hashem, to have that sense of Mishkan and Anan and come back again and feel that it's home. Be tugged by that yearning to come home and come back home, Mirz Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's the pine.
Losar Anan means, yes, that there was. No, so Losar Anan means he protected. No, that Mur Anan went. But the sense of Ashras Ashkina wasn't there. In other words, yes. Correct. Okay. I have to. I'm an oval. I can't stay longer. Please stay in the. Okay. I could mind. Okay.
You're the Balagola.
He's the Balagola. He'll tell you what's in the world outside of Olney.
This is my mother.
Oh, thank you for sharing John with us. We're thrilled. At Yisraelit.
Ken.
Yeah, Ayofi. Nachnu garnu 25 shana ba'aretz.
Ken, o'malu
Ken.
Ken.